On Monday, June 19th, 2017, GeekSpeak is doing a live version of their podcast at the Park Hall Community Center. That's in Ben Lomond, California. If you can't make it to Ben Lomond to check it out, you can listen to it on our IceCast server. Just go to echoplexmedia.com/live and all the information for the IceCast stream is right there. All right, everybody, welcome to the Plex interview. I am joined via Hangouts by Lyle Troxel, the host of the GeekSpeak podcast. How you doing?
Quite well. Thank you for having me.
Oh, well, thanks for joining me. I don't know if I told you this, but I've been listening to GeekSpeak since there was a time when I would have to kind of mess with a radio to get KUSP.
We'd have to do a little messing. Are you from San Jose?
I was actually in Fremont at the time, and I was able to pick it up.
Yeah. Down the coast, down slow, county. But it is no more. Sad state of affairs, but it actually died last year.
Yeah, I know. I heard your last episode on KUSP, and then your first episode when you guys were on your own. Actually, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about maybe the differences between that you've found, maybe some of the advantages and disadvantages of a radio station versus, you guys have rolled GeekSpeak yourself since you've moved away from the radio station.
That's right. A writing on the wall that the station was having some serious problems. I thought, well, I'm either going to stop when the station stops or I'm going to continue. If I'm going to continue, I better practice. So about a year before they really died, I started recording it remotely. And at first we did it at a friend's kitchen. He had a lot of gear that was... Then I decided I'll go ahead and invest in owning the equipment I need. So four mics, a really great handheld device called the Zoom 6 H6, which is a multiple four XLRs in and records the flash media, or you can connect it up to computer.
I have a Zoom H4N Pro if we're on the go. It has two XLRs and the condenser on the top. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great one for traveling. Once I had that, I thought, well, I can just do it at work. And work is at Netflix in Los Gatos for me. And there's a lot of conference rooms to choose from. So I walked around the room, all the building complex, the whole campus, testing out every room, and afterward listened to it until I found the best sounding room. You know, you don't want a lot of echoes and things. So I started recording, editing the show, recording kind of in a live form, because we've been doing a live one-hour show since 2002 is when we went to 1 hour. We were half an hour before that. And every week. And so I'm being ready to speak and speaking clearly for an hour all, live. And that means no editing. A lot of time. So, as you probably know. So I just started the show when we started doing it at Netflix. I just recorded it like it was a... And then afterwards took that file, clipped the front and the end off, and uploaded it to a server for KUSP. And no one really knew. We did stop taking phone calls, which was kind of a bummer, but we still offered people to ask us questions via email and Twitter and Facebook. So that was how we kept communication up. I did miss the live calls because the show started as a live call-in show, and it is fun to some degree to call. Of course, there's always an unexpected aspect of it. So... Lost the aspect of live call-ins, and I think kind of improved the show quality that we knew what we were going to talk about and we wouldn't get derailed. And then I started editing more. Just kind of happened because I had the audio file in front of me and why not edit it? And that caused me to start recording more content. So pretty soon, before the station was even dead, I was offering up a post show longer content that didn't air on the radio. And then the other thing I had to deal with was copyright and managing of the copyright content.
No, I heard you guys mention music that you guys, you have permission to use some music, but that leaving the radio station meant that you guys had to kind of back off on using music for basically anything on your show.
That's right. We've been using Through Being Cool for years. And it's a fun song. It kind of fit. It was actually a slightly edited version. And the reason we were able to do that is that with BMI, which is a music licensing service, it basically means that twice a year, KUSP would, for an entire week, write down every song it played and every publisher that was responsible for that song, give that to BMI, and then that company would then based off of the entire annual amount, they'd split up the money to go to all those different producers. And theoretically, some revenue would go back to the artist. Now, of course, we know really that almost nothing. So in any case, though, when we switched to doing podcast only, and early on in the podcast era, we had NPR and BMI, and the general consensus there, we were podcasting through the NPR's network, the general consensus there is that if it was played on the radio, it could then be put in a podcast form because the BMI licensing would actually pay the artists, and therefore the streaming online or the podcasting online is such a small percentage of listeners compared to the radio that the artist wasn't being taken advantage of. So the general consensus in the radio, in the nonprofit radio industry, was that it would be okay to use that music on podcasts as long as it went on air first. But then a secondary thing happened for me, and that was that I really believe in creating a big proponent of allowing us to remix our culture. And I don't like, for the example, that even though I grew up with Mickey Mouse being a character that was a big part of my life as a small child and my kid's child, there's no legal way for me to actually use and reappropriate and mix Mickey Mouse character. And Disney will actually come after you when you do that. And, you know, I understand the reasons and all that. But I like the idea of culture building off each other. I have a lot of people around me. And my grandmother's an art professor. And if you look through the history of art, you have a lot of reworking of work. And if you restrict that, you basically have no ability to produce a cultural aesthetic. And so in any case, I decided to create a comic. Doing that, I had to kind of only publish stuff that was stuff I could control. I couldn't republish through being cool because it's somebody else's song. So I pulled it from the show around the same time the station was kind of going under and started using something was made by just a listener who contributed something, which is kind of cool. So all of it's Creative Commons now.
What's the name of the listener? I know what song you're talking about. It's like got the modem noise and stuff at the beginning of the song. I think it's almost all computer names, computers noises. What's the name of that artist?
The artist, let's see, I end every show with this and I never pre-record it, so I just do it live. Let's see. The theme song is by Michael Newman of Pet Star Music. That's what it is.
That sounds just like your show.
Well, I say it every week. You know, for years we used different forms of doing the show live, different collaborative documents. And we switched and had been doing the Google Docs for quite a while. And it's cool because you can type that everybody else can read it at the same time. So we'd have a script document and we just kind of duped that document every week. But I don't know, about 6 months ago, I just stopped using that document form. I have no introductions written down. I have no script form written down. Though I do have a whole CMS for managing the news stories that people bring into.
Well, that's pretty cool. We handle music a completely different way. We beg for music. We go onto internet music forums like on Facebook or using hashtags on Twitter, and we tell local Bay Area musicians to send us their music. And now, it's been about a year since we started doing that. And if you played all the songs back to back to back, I think we have 6 days of music now.
That's awesome. See that if. I would definitely do that because I love the idea of, you know, especially connecting locally to bands. That's fantastic. But just in general, getting musicians, I mean, the big reason why radio and music have been such a good combination is the artists barely make any money from the radio. But when someone hears a good song on the radio, they might go buy the album. So it's really about, you know, exposure.
Or like we do when we play, we have a show we did last night. I'm a little tired from it. We had a few beers, but, we actually, when we play a song, if we know about it and if the band is, you know, somewhat communicative with us, we'll tell the audience about their next show, if their album's coming out, you know, mention their website or whatever we can do, because they send us music and we're not benefiting monetarily, but our project is benefiting from their music. So we try to, like, you know, throw some love their way when we play their songs.
Yeah.
So, one of the big things that so I listen to a lot of podcasts. I don't listen to a lot of society and culture shows, but it turns out that you guys are probably the society and culture show that I listen to because you are of my culture in a lot of ways. You live or you work down the street from my apartment, you know, and I think that you guys, it's your tech show is very different than the other ones I listen to. You're not really covering the tech headlines or talking about like what company is suing what company, or if you are talking about those things, you're talking about them in more, I guess, broad terms and how they affect the society around us, not like the sort of minutiae of what's going on with the story. And I really enjoy that. And I've been trying to turn a lot of my friends on to you guys' show, because the way you talk about tech is different. I don't know if you can, do you guys think about that? When you guys like get together to, you know, talk about the show, is that sort of one of the things you guys are focusing on as you plan the show?
I think that, you know, Miles and I are both pretty conscious of the effects in the world and care a lot about it. You know, we're both feminists. We're both interested in society being more fair to people and looking at our prejudices and how they work. And I think that just because he and I are like that, we end up talking about it. But it's one of the things that I have found important in what we do around technology is that a lot of people in the world, technology is just kind of a magic thing that occurs next to them and with them. And they ride along the technology wave, not really understanding it, but kind of using it and more using it. And our original goal of the show was to bridge the gap between geeks and the rest of you, telling everybody else, the non-geeks out there, how tech works. And what became really clear is that the details about how fast a processor is running, what scale the traces are on a board, we're down to some crazy number now, I can't recall what it is. That stuff is really interesting and fun for geeks. And if you get really that really cutting wave, it's like, yeah, kind of like a surfing thing, like really in the depth of it. But when it comes down to the broader motions of how that affects the world, the truth about technology, like the one fundamental truth, is that it changes. So every time you say, well, USB 2.0 is now this speed, 6 months later, that's just old. But how our society gets changed by those things is an everlasting and a really important thing to think about. And when you're aware of what's going on with technology, at a kind of detailed level, and the motivations by how the people are dealing with things, you have a better understanding of what the next step might be or how it might affect us. So it just kind of naturally becomes about why it's important to pay attention to technology, what decisions can be made that are problematic because people don't understand it. Legal, like you get a congressperson pushing a bill and they're saying, well, we want to protect our businesses in the state. And the bill they're suggesting is kind of actually going to make it's going to be a hurdle that people step over that doesn't affect the technology at all, except for to make it more complicated for people to understand. And it's those kind of side effects that occur because people don't really have a rich understanding of how technology works. So our show is just about that boundary.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I find that I'm able to recommend your show to friends of mine who aren't very techie, because I've been trying to think of ways to say, you know, you say you bridge the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. And I think that's pretty good. But I think when I like try to turn people on, I try to explain to them more that you touched on fairness and feminism, and you guys were the first tech show I heard kind of talking about those issues. I think you guys may have even been talking about the issues of fairness, race, gender in technology well before the things hit the news, you know, before it started hitting the mainstream, like that Facebook was very white and male and that Google was very white and male, before those were kind of in the conversation at large. And it was kind of neat to see it happen first, or at least from where I was listening, first on you guys' show, and then have it kind of show up in the other tech shows that I listen to.
Yeah, and I think we've been talking about that space for quite a while. I mean, for years. This is the thing about doing a show for 17 years, that as things emerge, they become these themes that you see. The imbalance of who is actually creating technology is a perfect example of that. You just happen to have that born out of a lot of white guys. And because of that beginning, it never base. And it's been really challenging to see that. And of course, for me to be a white guy and seeing that, I'm in this place of high privilege, technology around me. and also just aware that my privilege is not shared amongst all people. So I don't think we did anything special in noticing it early. I think we just always have been noticeable and trying to solve it. The solution problem space is really difficult for this because it's not about, who was there first. It's about the that your people are completely unaware of that restrict the access to some people. And so like my current bent on this really is that the people that are in the majority in privilege need to really inspect how they interact with people. And since you've heard my show, like in a meeting, being in a meeting with a whole bunch of people that are all talking about technology, and if I train myself to not interrupt, and I interrupt people all the time, but I'm more conscious and put more precedence on not interrupting women. And this is just an example of, yes, it's harder, and that even seems unfair, right? Why wouldn't I also not? It's because I'm aware that I have prejudice and that I might, if I don't check myself, interrupt a woman more than a man. And that's not because intentionally, it's because I grew up in a society that is just that way. And so I have to accept that just like you can show me an optical illusion and it like those two buildings are the same height. I know that the buildings are different heights, right? I know the buildings are actually the same heights because I've seen a lot of optical illusions. I also know that I treat people differently because of who they are, and I need to fight that as well. And look at it more like a condition of humanity instead of a judgment upon yourself.
Yeah, that's, I've been thinking a lot about, not just because of your show, but because of a lot of what I've been listening to lately. I've been thinking about, what the difference in my life might be if I wasn't, well, right now, like a middle-aged white guy, and it like never really occurred to me because, we live in a very diverse place and it sort of like went past me in a way, I didn't see it because it wasn't like the racism or the bias that we might see in a movie, like the caricature of a racism and bias where somebody just says something totally inappropriate at dinner, So it's here it's like not what we think of as racial or gender bias. Like when we like in our culture and in movies and TV, I think you have to think more about it and you have to almost be looking for it to notice it, which is, and you to correct it, it's things that seem small and annoying, like you were saying. And I just think that you guys do a really excellent job of talking about that and doing it in a way where you're not calling anybody an asshole,
Trying not to. Yeah. Thanks, David. I'd appreciate it.
Well, I do listen every week. I think I'm pretty much out of questions except for like, do you guys have any ideas for like, might the show be changing in any new and interesting ways as we move forward or...
It's one of the things we started with right before we started really engaging in the recording was that, you do this, a lot of it's about enjoying. And I decided years ago that I would do the show as the main motivation because I enjoy it. Now that's enjoy because I maybe people, which I enjoy, educate people, but also just because it's fun. Like it's fun to come together with people and talk about interesting ideas. My motivation has been that way. Because my motivation is that way, it means that I don't invest the into it that might make it more successful. So I'm always balanced upon, family's taken care of and I'm doing GeekSpeak. And it's very challenging for me. Well, I want to do an excellent job on GeekSpeak. At the same time, I have as long as my arm of people that I could have on and interview and chat with, and they'd be great conversations. And doing that requires a lot of work. And I'm in a situation where I can't overcommit my time to make it. If I had my druthers, I would have more people on in a broader area, not just continually have the people I know around me on, but have someone on let go of from Uber and what's the culture like there and really interview them about the different areas and add more direct knowledge of the topics we talk about rather than our speculation. I think that would be my preferred goal. So, you know, last year or so, I asked patrons to start giving me money. I'd never done that before directly. I'd always supported the station. And so now there's some income. It's not a lot, but it's a little bit. Maybe hire somebody to do that task that I'm not very good at, booking more interviews and things. So I think that if you're going to see in the next year or so, probably more outside people coming in and sharing your expertise. Looking forward to that because that means more people I get to meet and be fascinated by.
Well, that's great. You know, more voices are good. I really do like you and Miles a lot, but you know, it certainly wouldn't hurt to hear some outside voices, maybe even people specifically outside of the Valley. Because feel like we're in a bubble here in a lot of ways. Like it's wonderful here. I almost fear leaving the Bay Area in some ways, but you know, I try to do my best to communicate outside of this bubble, and it's, you know, not necessarily via my podcast, but however I can. And it's a little tough, you know? And so I think, like there's a tech scene in Austin. There's still a tech scene in New York City. I believe there's a tech scene in, Atlanta. So
they're all growing too. Every city's got a little bit and is growing.
Well, right. Especially if you get a critical mass of smart people there, and it's cheaper to roll your business in Atlanta than San Jose. You know, you might roll your business in Atlanta.
Yeah. I did find another form with podcasting that happened recently. Last Hack Day, I went ahead at Netflix and started product managers about what we're working on. And the idea behind it was just to share inner office information. You know, we have a really broad open culture at Netflix, and so everything. Nothing's off. You know, we have access to the financials. We have access to what businesses we're working with, what, you know, television shows when you come out, all the employees have access, which is really kind of a great enriching experience. And so I started doing a podcast internally and interviewing people, and I'm having these great conversations with these really smart people and realizing, well, I can't share these with a broader audience, but at Netflix, so maybe those people all listen to it. And just recently I had some conversations where I just realized like almost everybody has some really wonderful insights about how our world is changing. And it's a pleasure to chat with people. So I kind of urge people to conversations, you know, listen to the podcast you're listening to and enjoying about technology, about society and technology, and then go have those conversations with people around the dinner table, around, you know, people you don't normally talk to about that kind of stuff. Because a lot of people have these one about how technology has changed their life or how they deal with it and how they use it. And because it's so fresh and new all the time, it's insightful to figure out how humans engage and how it changes them personally.
Okay. Well, thanks for taking the time to talk to me today. Lyle, can you tell people where they can find you?
David, I'm Lyle on Twitter, just LYLE on Twitter. And the GeekSpeak program is GeekSpeak Podcast with Lyle Troxell. You can find it, you know, on any editing system like iTunes, and of course also at geekspeak.org.
All right. Well, thanks again for taking the time. This has been an interview with Lyle Troxell of GeekSpeak, and thanks for tuning into the Plex interview.